but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
BFFT. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
What do we do with Lane Kiffin? Can we have a conversation about Lane Kiffin, the LSU football coach, Lane Kiffin? Off to LSU, and I have to wonder, does LSU know how this ends? Mississippi, Ole Miss should have known how it was going to end with Lane Kiffin. We saw him at USC. We saw him with the Raiders. You've seen him at multiple stops, Florida Atlantic. Lane Kiffin does what's best for Lane Kiffin. He makes it messy. He likes the drama. Could have probably stayed at Ole Miss. Had the same amount of money, or at least comparable money, to LSU. And, told the world, the problem's not me. I've changed. Look at me. I tell this story all the time, but once upon a time when the Trailblazers were having all their troubles, way, way, way many years ago, Darius Miles and Reuben Patterson showed up to Blazers Media Day one year, and they said, "We've turned over a new leaf. We are changed." And I think Darius was even getting married. So he's very excited about, life changes, man. I'm grown up now because I'm getting married. Which we all know maybe amplifies your deficiencies as much as it hides them. But Darius Miles, said he was changed. And I remember reaching out to a sports psychologist who said, no, because you get a piece of paper or because you get married doesn't mean you change. You actually have to change. Lane Kiffin had a chance to change. He had a chance to show the world that he was a new person, that the immaturity of his other stops, it was all about, him being immature. And here he is in the same week where he's going after a podcaster who, by the way, probably shouldn't have called him a hoe. That's not good form either. In the same breath as him going after that guy, Lane Kiffin off to LSU. And by the way, he wanted to stay and coach at Ole Miss and coach them through the playoffs because they will make the CFP field. I think they should. Will the selection committee hold this against the program? We'll talk about that coming up. A lot of tentacles to this thing. But Lane Kiffin wanted to stick around. Some of the talking heads on ESPN wanted him to stick around. Not lost on me that Creative Artists Agency, CAA, the agency that represents Lane Kiffin, Jimmy Sexton, the agent of record for Lane Kiffin, the same agency represents a lot of the talking heads on ESPN. And I think it's why we got the narrative. Oh, let him coach. Oh, this isn't him. This is Nick Saban saying it's not him. This is just the calendar that's wrong. I think what we have here is a conflict of interest with the talking heads on ESPN and the football coach now at LSU. But I want to know what you make of it. 503-417-7575. Tell me what you think of Lane Kiffin's act. How much of America will be rooting against LSU? Does LSU know that it ends badly for LSU as well? Like, you have to know that. When you sign up for Lane Kiffin, you sign up for the departure of Lane Kiffin as well. We've got a great show for you today. We're going to talk about the playoff ramifications. The coaching carousel is spinning. Oregon State will introduce Jamarcus Shepherd as their new football coach tomorrow in a news conference at noon. I've got a bunch of things cooking this week that I want to share with you, but we're going to start with one Lane Kiffin. 503-417-7575. Stephen, you're gonna lead us off. What do you make of the whole act, the whole thing, Lane Kiffin to LSU? It dominated and sucked up all the oxygen out of college football and what should have been one of the most important weekends of the year.
Well, number one is I'm not shocked with how Lane Kiffin handled the whole thing. Let's just go through his departures, shall we, of being the head coach. He got fired on the tarmac. That's not normal. Remember when Al Davis fired him with the Raiders with the overhead projector and all that kind of stuff? Well, that wasn't normal either. Then remember in Knoxville, he just left in the middle of the night and there were riots happening because of, you know, he left after 1 year. Definitely not normal. Remember when he was at Alabama, John, as the offensive coordinator? Nick Saban didn't let him coach in the title game because he was looking for other jobs and trying to recruit players and coaches. That definitely wasn't normal. And now we got this one as well. So the track record, you know, speaks for itself. Actions speak louder than words with Lane Kiffin. He can say he's changed. He can say he wants to be different. He is who he is. He's going to burn every bridge that he has. And I would imagine in about 5 years at LSU, he's probably going to do the same exact thing again. But I will say this. The talking heads have been talking a lot, and it's very interesting, John, because they keep saying, well, Ole Miss should let Lane Kiffin coach in the CFP. They should really? Like, you think that they should let this guy, who has already accepted a job at your rival, stay in your building, have all your passcodes, all your keys, all everything like that.
Recruit your players, recruit the staff.
Right, recruit players and staff for a whole nother month. You think that is okay? You think that's what you should happen? Nick Saban and Kirk Herbstreit, I'm talking to you. That is insane that they even brought that up, and they keep pushing that narrative that they should have let Lane Kiffin
coach. You know why, though? I said it. They, you know, those guys are represented by the same agent that represents the coaches.
Is there no integrity now? Is there no integrity in sports media anymore?
I don't know if the viewers, listeners, fans care as much as I do. That's the thing I wrestle with, because I look at that, and if you look at, you know, CAA, the agency that represents the coaches, Jimmy Sexton, really, and you look at CAA representing, you know, the talking heads, people like Ian Rappaport, Pete Thamel, Kirk Herbstreit, Nick Saban, and you go, okay, wait a minute, there's a little bit of a conflict of interest here. Can you have CAA pulling the strings on all the coaching moves while also controlling the narrative in college football and what's said about it? Because, you know, everybody knows that's why the stories are get broken by the people who are breaking the stories at that level.
The problem is, John, is I don't disagree with him that the calendar is messed up. Like, it should be different. But at the same time, like, they keep pushing this narrative of, oh, it's not Lane Kiffin's fault. Well, yes, it is. If he really wants to coach Ole Miss in the CFP, he can coach Ole Miss by not taking a new job. He can say, look, I love it here in Oxford. He even said, it's in the best 6 years of my life. Well, then stay at Ole Miss and coach for another season in the college.
Does he know how to be happy, though? Don't you have friends that don't know how to be happy?
Well, he even said,
be happy and they're not.
In that, he had a weird interview with Marty Smith, like on a dirt road behind an airplane as he was about to leave to go to LSU. And he even mentions his dad, Monty Kiffin, how he coached at 17 different spots. Like, this is just kind of who Lane Kiffin is, and I think that's kind of what he brought up. He looked at his dad, who was a super successful defensive coordinator at a lot of places, but he bounced around. Like, he went everywhere. I think Lane Kiffin kind of looked at him and said, look, that's kind of what you're supposed to do. You know, you probably burn every bridge. He seems like he's kind of an a-hole, like hard to deal with. He probably burns everybody out after about 5 years.
Yeah, and I'm big on studying family of origin. And I think you can explain a lot about people, you know, based on their family of origin. And Lane Kiffin certainly just pointing at his dad, who was one of the best defensive coordinators in football and in the NFL, and going, okay, that guy is why I am how I am. You know, okay, fine. But that doesn't mean you need to be disloyal. Like, be self-aware as well, because the money that was being paid to him by Mississippi, he's getting a raise to go to LSU. He could have negotiated about the same amount of money from Ole Miss. So for me, is this really about resources, or is this about Lane Kiffin just needing a change of scenery and never being happy where his feet are? Kirk Herbstreit, meanwhile, pandering, saying, leave Lane alone, let him coach.
This team is a team you don't want to play in a CFP right now. So I think if you're in charge at Ole Miss, and if Lane decides to go elsewhere, I think you need to set your emotions to the side. You need to look at 2025 and this team with their coach and giving them a chance to finish this run, whoever that might be. That's the tricky part here. I think there's no doubt if you talk to the players, some of them come out publicly and said, we want our coach to coach us to the end. So I think Ole Miss administration is put in a very tough spot, because if he were going to stay at Ole Miss, Eli Drinkwitz is already re-upped. Clark Lee is re-upped. Don't you think we would have already seen he's re-upping and staying at Ole Miss? So there's chances are he's going to Baton Rouge. I think Ole Miss has to accept that and look at this as a magical year. You've never done what you're doing right now. Let Lane Kiffin, if he leaves, and these players finish the run this year.
Herbie banging the drum there for Lane Kiffin. I mean, you could just hear it. And, you know, his agent told him, like, you know, Lane needs to be there and be best for Lane to be there. But it's not what's best. Like, if you're working at Starbucks and you tell your manager at Starbucks, hey, I just got a job at Dutch Bros. And let me stay here for two more weeks and write down all the Starbucks recipes and procedures and practices, and then I'm going to leave. That manager's going to take your apron and kick you out the door. Like, there's, you know, there's just no way that you can do this, and you especially can't do it in college football, where, yes, the calendar's off. Yes, there's the potential for him to be poaching talent from Mississippi and saying, come to LSU, I can get you this and this and this. Not only that, it's just such a murky, dark cloud over the program. And I got news for you, Herbie. If I'm in the playoff bracket right now, I don't want to play Ole Miss, because I don't know. They might show up with a vengeance in the playoff and beat somebody they're not supposed to beat.
Also, when it comes to the contract, he mentioned, you know, Drinkwitz getting the contract extension with Herb and Kiffin. If you read anything, take 2 seconds to read, Lane Kiffin gets a contract extension 1 year. Every year Ole Miss wins seven games. So his contract was extended. Don't act like it's not. Like they're trying to push the whole thing.
They knew he was gone. They knew he was gone.
Right,
so did everybody
like
else
like,
who was represented
like so
by CAA.
Stupid, John. Like, why do they have to act like we're dumb?
But I think some of the public isn't aware. Like, you know, everybody else in that media space who's related and represented by CAA, Creative Artists Agency, kind of knew what Lane Kiffin was going to do. Well, why do you think? Why do you think media members who are out there are breaking the stories that they're breaking? And I'm, you know, you're not going to get Shams, you're not going to get Woj, you're not going to get Pete Thamel, you're not going to get these guys to call out Creative Artists Agency. Why? Because they're repped by it. It's one and the same. Let's go to the phone lines. 503-417-7575. Cam is in Eugene listening on Fox Sports Eugene. Cam, what's up?
Hey, John. Hope you had a good holiday. Everybody else there, too. So real quick on the Ducks, another great game for Dante Moore. I've kind of been looking for stepping stones throughout the season. The win on the road to Iowa, coming back on the last drive, was a big part of his maturation. And then last weekend, to have the running game taken away and to have the defense say, I bet you can't beat us throwing, and then he beats you throwing. What a great, just a great weekend for Dante Moore's progression as a starter. On to other migratory birds, Lane Kiffin. If you're not a fan of Lane Kiffin, and if you're not a fan of the SEC, and if you're not a fan of LSU, just sit back, make some popcorn, and enjoy the show. Because Lane Kiffin's going to Kiffin, and he just Kiffin'd again, just as we saw, the drama and everything. I didn't know somebody called him a hoe. That's funny. But LSU does one of two things every 4 years. They either win a national title or they fire their coach. Nobody can win enough to remain the head coach of LSU over the long term. Lane Kiffin is the latest Icarus who's flying too close to the sun, thinking he can keep people down there happy. Nobody could. And so it's just going to end up with Kiffin getting fired and the governor promising we're not going to do it again before the state of Louisiana does it again. And as for the SEC, they're not going to hold it, or the College Football Committee is not going to hold it against LSU, or excuse me, against Ole Miss if they lost their coach. They just won't, because they're in the SEC. Sure, if it's Florida State and they lose their quarterback right before the playoffs,
right,
boy, you got to factor that in. But I bet you anything, they will not penalize Ole Miss.
Yeah, I'll keep an eye on it. I'm really curious tomorrow when those rankings come out. It'll be at the 4 o'clock hour tomorrow, probably about 4:20 or so. We'll have the final rankings heading into the championship weekend. So not the final rankings, but the second to final rankings heading into championship weekend. What happens to Ole Miss? Where is Miami relative to Notre Dame? That's another one. You could just feel it. I don't know if you watched the end of the Stanford game on Saturday night. I stayed up really late. Obviously, I was in Seattle watching Oregon and Washington, and then I drove back after the Oregon-Washington game and drove the 3 hours back to the Portland metropolitan area, and I flipped on Stanford and Notre Dame because I was interested to see, like, would Notre Dame try to put some style points up on Stanford? Because remember, Stanford was in a 7-7 tie with Miami at halftime in Miami and ended up losing that game 45-7. It was all Miami in the second half. So I was curious to see what Marcus Freeman would try to do. And Stanford put a couple of late scores in the fourth quarter. And Notre Dame pushing to the almost to the final snap, trying to, you know, run the score up a little bit and trying to get a little more breathing room. And certainly trying to get the 21-plus point differential that the committee talks about, three-touchdown differential. And really, Marcus Freeman almost had to apologize. I think he did apologize to Frank Reich and Andrew Luck after the game, saying, hey, this is the situation we're in, but they're going to be compared to Miami by the committee because Miami beat Notre Dame head-to-head in their game. And so just a lot to unpack in tomorrow's rankings. Stephen, what are you interested to see in these rankings when they come out tomorrow?
Yeah, I'm with the caller. I don't think they're going to downgrade Ole Miss too much. Not enough to miss out on the playoffs. Had they lost that Mississippi State game, it would have gotten really interesting had they kept them in or not. But I think Ole Miss is in. It's the Miami versus Notre Dame thing, because the committee has kind of backed into a corner right now with the ACC and how the ACC championship game is Duke versus Virginia. Like, I know that if Virginia wins, they're going to be in because they are ranked in the CFP, but Duke has five losses, John, yet they're only going to be like a 2.5-3 point underdog in that ACC title game. If they win that game, like, they may not make the playoff. And so I think that they may try to creep Miami up a little bit to get an ACC representative as an at-large bid. So I wonder if they're starting to put a thought of that in already of saying, look, if Duke wins this game, we're not going to put Duke in. Like, Duke may not get in the tournament. It may be two other group of five conferences that get in as the 12 seed and the 11 seed, but let's try to sneak Miami into number 10 and get them in so every conference is represented. And it would probably come at the expense of Notre Dame because of the head-to-head. And also, Miami put it on Pittsburgh last week. They actually beat Pittsburgh more than Notre Dame beat Pittsburgh by. So there are some arguments now that says, look, Miami should be ahead of Notre Dame. I think that that's the main one you got to be looking for.
I thought it was really disappointing what Lane Kiffin did. I'm not one of these people that supports people going to the airport to greet the team or to flip off the coach when the coach is leaving, but I did not blame the Ole Miss fans who went to the Oxford airport and decided to go double birds and yell at Lane Kiffin while he was getting on the plane. Lane Kiffin, meanwhile, saying LSU is the best job in football. Is he right?
LSU is the best job in football. When you take the history, tradition, passion, and the great players in the state of Louisiana, no one can argue that when you're in Tiger Stadium on Saturday night, there is nothing like it. And this place is built for championships with championship expectations. We understand that. But as an elite competitor, that's exactly what you want. And that's why we're here.
Well, this is a guy who said the same thing at USC. Best job in college football. Went to USC and did okay. Didn't do great. Never felt like he was going to put USC in a position to do what Pete Carroll did at USC. Then, you know, you see him at different points of his career in the NFL. You see him sort of resurrected now at Mississippi. I thought he had it going pretty good. Paul Feinbaum speaking for a lot of the SEC. Paul Feinbaum apparently not repped by CAA, Stephen.
It's just so typical of Lane Kiffin to do something so utterly destructive. And that's what he did. It's hard to believe really almost anything he said there in that interview. If he wanted to coach these kids, as he put it, he could have. And the simple answer is he would have remained the Ole Miss football coach. Where he began the season, where he told these young men, we have a chance to win a championship, and they still do. And what does he do? What Lane Kiffin always does. He lights a match to the castle that he built, and he runs out of town in the middle of the night, although this was in broad daylight. It's utterly disgraceful.
Utterly disgraceful. I agree with Feinbaum on that one. We got a great show today. We're going to talk about the firing of Jonathan Smith at Michigan State, the hiring of Jamarcus Shepherd at Oregon State, Dan Lanning's staff, is he due some changes? His coordinators, Will Stein and Tosh Lapoy, are they on the move? We'll talk about it all this hour. Leave it here. Phone calls as well at 503-417-7575. You get the BFT.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Oregon State will introduce Jamarcus Shepherd as the new football coach tomorrow, noon news conference. Shepherd will be on the show tomorrow. You'll hear him right here on the Bald-Faced Truth. So his first public interview, one-on-one interview, will be on this radio show. And Oregon State will introduce him tomorrow. I can't say I'm surprised that he is the hire. I will say this. It comes with risk for Scott Barnes, the athletic director at Oregon State. He seemingly made the wrong move with Trent Bray. He seemingly has made the wrong move in extending Wayne Tinkle. Oregon State men's basketball looks like it's going to struggle again this season. And there's a little bit of warmth around Scott Barnes, or a lot of warmth if you're looking on social media around Scott Barnes. He has to get this hire right. He knows he had to get the hire right. It's probably why he went out and put a hiring committee together to help him make the hire. Wanted to make it bulletproof. Wanted to give himself some cover, so to speak. Barnes now making the hire of Jamarcus Shepherd. If you followed my reporting, you know, it was Brent Vegan, the Montana State coach. It was Tim Polashek, the North Dakota State coach. And it was Jamarcus Shepherd, the Alabama assistant. Those were your finalists. I think if Barnes were left on his own, he probably would have hired one of the sitting head coaches. It's a safer move. I am told that Shepherd's interview with the hiring committee that Barnes put together, ironically, forced him to interview Shepherd, which I don't think he would have said, hey, this is a finalist. I think Shepherd wouldn't have made the next round, and by no fault of Shepherd's. I just think you don't want to bring in another coach who's not no experience as a head coach. And, you know, you don't want to go through that again, what you went through with Trent Bray. So you often see course corrections. Very rarely would you see an athletic director who's made a mistake by hiring a coordinator hire another coordinator. It's just, this is unusual. And I heard from more than one person in the inner sanctum at Oregon State, even as Shepherd was advancing, I heard from more than one person that, you know, no, it's probably going to go to one of the head coaches, Now, I am told Oregon State brought, you know, Vegan in, flew him in from Montana and interviewed him on that Sunday. And the big hang up with Brent Vegan was he wanted to do what Lane Kiffin wanted to do. He wanted to coach his team all the way through the FCS playoffs. Now, Stephen, is it any different what Brent Vegan wanted to do at Montana State? Because Scott Barnes put his foot down and said, okay, you know, we're not offering you the job if you're not available to take it right away because the portal's opening. We want a coach who's going to go out and start recruiting. Is there any difference between what Vegan wanted to do and what Lane Kiffin wanted to do?
I think if he was out in the forefront about it, and as you're saying, like he's talking about how, like, look, I would love to take this job, but I do want to finish my coaching, where Kiffin was kind of so coy about everything. I wasn't out in the open about anything. It just kind of made it a whole big joke.
You don't trust Lane Kiffin.
Right. I think he's burned the bridges too many times because Bob Chesney at James Madison, he's set to take the UCLA job. If James Madison makes the playoff, UCLA said, cool, go coach the playoff. Go coach your guys. So I think it's not different, but it's
is
just,
it different from FCS to, like, you know, because the fear at Montana State has to be that Vegan's going to take his whole roster to Oregon State.
Right. I think it's a little different because you are right. Like, he would take his entire roster. So if you are Montana State, you would love to have him there and coach that roster up until he leaves Oregon State. But it's not necessarily that different. It's more just a personality thing. Like, you can't trust Lane Kiffin. I think right now you can trust these other guys. Like, I think it's great if, you know, if you say, like, let's Bob Chesney coach James Madison. I think it would have been great if Oregon State let Brent Vegan coach his guys as well. I don't think that LSU I don't think Ole Miss should have let Lane Kiffin coach their team if he leaves for LSU.
My thing is, on one hand, I hear Brent Vegan. He's saying, hey, if I start something, I want to finish it. We have that rule in our household with, you know, the daughters. You start a soccer season, you finish it. You start a lacrosse season, you finish it. Okay, you're not enjoying it, so what? You can make that decision in the off season, but you finish the season. So I think Brent Vegan very much wanted to finish his season, wanted to see it through. They're number two in the FCS seedings and in the bracket. And, you know, over at number one is Tim Polashek and North Dakota State. Now, so Vegan says, I want to finish. And I actually think it's kind of the same. It might even, to me, it might even be worse. Because if I'm Montana State, you know, it's not that I don't trust and like Brent Vegan. It's that, ooh, are you going to take all these guys and go to Oregon State and we're going to have to start all the way over? Or, like, there's a little discomfort there if you're Montana State with this as well. I think it's very similar to what Lane Kiffin is going through, although Lane Kiffin's a snake, okay, or a scorpion, or whatever you want to call him. So I think I would be uncomfortable with it even on the FCS level to some extent. But Scott Barnes said, okay, I don't want that. And, of course, then he probably thought he could get Polishek. But I am told Tim Polishek, they had to fly to Fargo, North Dakota to get him to sit down for an interview. And to me, that's a bad sign. To me, it's a sign that he's not that interested in the job and maybe didn't want the job at any point because he's not even willing to get on a plane to go talk about a job that's going to pay him more money. So he says, meet me in Fargo. So Scott Barnes, the athletic director at Oregon State, and Glenn Sugiyama, who is the search firm consultant at DHR Global, they get on a plane at PDX, and they fly to Fargo. Okay? I would have loved to be on that plane. Where did they sit? What did they talk about? What did they wear? Where did they go? I know where they ended up. They ended up at a four-star hotel in Fargo. You know why? Because there's not a five-star hotel in Fargo. And they ended up in the lobby of this hotel. And I'm going to tell this dirty little secret on air. I was told that Polishek did not want... He was nervous about being seen in the lobby, okay? He was nervous about people seeing him. He was nervous about the North Dakota State fans seeing him. He was nervous in a way that tells me maybe he didn't want the job all along, right? Because he didn't want to be seen. He didn't want to have to answer questions. Didn't want people to think he wasn't committed. Polishek is in this four-star hotel. He's expecting that he's going to show up at the hotel and he's going to meet Sugiyama and Barnes up in like a suite and then talk about the Oregon State job. Instead, he encounters Sugiyama, the search firm guy, in the lobby who jokes around loudly, according to staffers, jokes around saying, congratulations, coach. Like, you know, you got the job, more or less. And Polishek was horrified. And I kind of wonder, like, first of all, he doesn't get on the plane to Portland. He stays in North Dakota. He makes Oregon State come to him. He wants to meet somewhere discreet. He is horrified that, you know, something is said publicly about, hey, you got the job, whatever. They were joking around. And what happens within hours? Remember what happened last week? All of a sudden, Polishek had a contract extension in North Dakota State. He had signed this multi-year deal. He had gotten a raise. He had more resources for his program. That doesn't happen while you're standing in the lobby. That has to happen days before you're standing in that lobby. I think my sense is that Tim Polishek never wanted the Oregon State job, didn't intend to take it, was kicking the tires, happy to interview, happy to meet the search firm, but probably not interested in leaving and did not want the appearance with his own fan base that he was leaving. So really now, there's no Vegan because he's not ready to come right away from Montana State. He wants to wait several weeks. And there's no Polishek. He's out. So if it's not for the search firm saying, Jamarcus Shepherd crushed the interview, you need to see him in person, Scott Barnes. He needs to be a finalist. If it's not for that element of this search, I kind of think Oregon State would have had a dead end and had to scrap the search and start over. But instead, Barnes knew he had a high-ceiling guy in Jamarcus Shepherd. They come back to Portland. They interview Shepherd. He's a home run. He now has Oregon State kind of over a barrel, so to speak, and is able to say to them, hey, I want a general manager, which is something, you know, on this show that Scott Barnes said, I'm not sure we need a general manager. Jamarcus Shepherd knew that Scott Barnes had come on this show and had said, I'm not sure the football program needs a general manager. And Jamarcus Shepherd told Scott Barnes and his agent told Scott Barnes on Thanksgiving Day and then on the morning of Black Friday, they were still negotiating very early, told him, I want the GM or I can't take this job, which I love about Jamarcus Shepherd because it tells me he at least understands how to be a CEO. And he leveraged Scott Barnes into giving him the GM. It's got the GM. It's a player personnel guy coming from Alabama to Corvallis. You're going to hear all about it on tomorrow's show and in tomorrow's interview with Shepard. But that's how Jamarcus Shepard got the job. And look, and I knew probably on Thanksgiving, maybe even before Thanksgiving, that it was leaning towards Shepard. But there was a little pause on the day before Thanksgiving, on the Wednesday before. There was a little pause as Justin Wilcox was talking to Scott Barnes, as there was some uncertainty about Jonathan Smith's future in East Lansing. And I think Oregon State was going, okay, are we really going to hand the keys to somebody who's never been a coach again for the second time? I think this is much different than Trent Bray. I think Shepard has a chance to be really good at Oregon State. I also need to see it, right? I don't want to just say he's going to be great, because this is a conference that's got, you know, Boise State in it next year. It's got Jim Mora at Colorado State. It has Matt Entz at Fresno State, who's from North Dakota. He's a really good coach. You've got Sean Lewis at San Diego State. You've got Bronco Mendenhall at Utah State. Jimmy Rogers at Washington State. Like, this is a conference that's got some sneaky good coaches that all have more momentum. Most of them, except Mora, really, have more momentum than Oregon State does. That's what Jamarcus Shepard's up against. Steven, your concerns, your thoughts as you hear about how that unfolded?
I was hosting the show on Wednesday, and you texted me at 3:01 exactly. Show has started. You said, kind of some weird vibes in Corvallis. And that kind of threw me off a little bit. I'm like, whoa, like, what is happening here? What's going on with Corvallis? Yes. You see the new or the old coaches head back to their spots. And it made me think, okay, like, are they really going to go with Jamarcus Shepard? Are they going to be holding out for Jonathan Smith, who did end up getting fired today? You know, I think it's the right move to go with Jamarcus Shepard. I thought maybe they're going to hold out and try to get that proven head coach, because it's tough to make another unknown hire. But everything you read about the guy, everything you hear about the guy, I've gone back and I've listened to some of the stuff.
Very impressive. Says,
very impressive person Jamarcus Shepard is. So I think it's the right thing. Get a young guy in there that is willing to do the work, willing to go out and recruit. And you hear that. He's out there recruiting with his new staff already, like on the coaching trails. And I think that's what Oregon State needs. And look, John, New Mexico, I said this on Wednesday, New Mexico turned around their team, who lost everybody a season ago. They were 5-7. They lost their quarterback, Devin Dampier. They lost all their guys. Jason Ett comes in. They go, 9-3 and tied for the Mountain West Conference Championship. Oregon State can do the same thing in the new Pac-12. They were 2-10 this year. They're going to have a brand new roster. If they bring in the right guys, why can't they compete for a Pac-12 championship next season? I think Jamarcus Shepard is going to be the guy that says, look, I can go out and get these players to compete, and that should be the goal.
They are mining for talent right now, but I'm excited to see Shepard interviewed tomorrow and have him on the show first time. Let's go out to the phone lines. Roy in Portland. Roy, welcome to the conversation. Roy, are you there? Roy's not there. Mark's in Portland. Let's go to Mark. What's on your mind, Mark?
Part about college football is, I remember the Oregon with Mario Cristobal and the coach before him. You were just waiting for them to dart. So, I mean, Oregon State's got to be cautious of that as well. I mean, what Lane Kiffin's doing, I'm wondering if Mario Cristobal would have left Oregon if he was in the 14 playoff. I don't understand. Why would Lane Kiffin leave those kids? They qualified in the SEC as 11-1 team for the playoffs. And him bolting is one of the worst things I've heard in sports. I don't understand that. I really don't.
But well, part of it is just who he is, right? Look at his resume.
Yeah. John, he was never in the playoffs with a chance to win the national championship at a school. I mean, if he could lead these guys to a championship, it'd be one of the greatest stories ever. And he just says, see ya. Goodbye, guys. I don't get that. And I got a question for you guys, though, that's a different topic would be, if Texas Tech loses to BYU, would the selection committee put 3 Big Ten teams in as byes? People keep saying Oregon could end up 4. I don't want to end up 4.
You don't. I don't think Oregon wants to be 4.
I want them to be 5.
Yeah,
I don't think they'll put them in there for that reason. I don't think they're going to give one conference, unless it's the SEC. They're not going to give the Big Ten 3 byes.
Look, if Oregon ends up as the 4 seed, their whole master plan may have been foiled, because all along I've kind of believed that they were okay losing a game. And, you don't want that to happen. Let's go back to Roy. He is back, I'm told. Roy, what's up, man? Go ahead.
Hey, how you doing, John?
Doing well.
For all the people talking about Lane Kiffin, Ole Miss and Mississippi State is two of the worst programs in the SEC. I'm like, what are y'all talking about? Ole Miss is only relevant because of Lane Kiffin. Okay, I mean, it's a historically Ole Miss. I mean, come on, man. Ole Miss is Kentucky to me is a better program than Ole Miss as far as the like the amount of you know the city the amount of NIL. I mean, Ole Miss.
But don't you think Lane does this because he throws lighter fluid and kerosene and gasoline on everything, and he throws a match. Like, isn't the right thing to just say, "Hey, I'm leaving for LSU." I really thank Mississippi for everything. It's just unfortunate. The calendar's bad. I wish I could stay and coach, but it's not the right thing. I need to step out of the way very quietly. That's not his style, though, is it?
No, but I'm thinking that, listen, LSU, I don't think it's a top five program, but LSU is a heck of a lot better than Mississippi. And you're going to get a whole different athlete being the coach of LSU. The high school talent in Louisiana – you know, he had his best, I think last year, his class, the one with Jackson Dart, I think that was better than this class that he got, this team he's got this year, and they only went 9-3. Mm. You don't have to raid the portal when you with the coach of LSU. The high school talent down there is unbelievable in the state of Louisiana. He's going to have an easier time recruiting. He's going to have more high school talent. He's not going to have to rely on a portal. I mean, LSU is kind of an easy place to win a national championship. It's easier than Mississippi. Ole Miss, like I said, is only relevant because Lane Kiffin built up that program. I mean, Ole Miss historically has a bad reputation as far as, like, racism and the South and the rebels and all that. So, I mean, I don't even see what the problem – plus he's getting paid – he got paid an extra $5 million a year. I mean, who wouldn't take an extra $5 million?
There are reports out that say that Mississippi would have matched. But you're saying these jobs are not equal. I'm saying it doesn't matter. If you're going to leave, leave. But leave with some grace and class. You know, we know who Lane Kiffin is. He's not going to stay at LSU either, Roy. He's going to go there for 3 or 4 or 5 years, and then he's going to ditch them and leave them in a lurch, too. He'll go to the NFL. He'll go somewhere else.
Yeah, he might do that. But he might do that. But I think he'll win a national championship faster there than he would ever will at Ole Miss. And another thing, John, Jonathan Smith, boy.
Ooh.
Now, that didn't – listen, sometimes I didn't like the fit from the beginning, man. You can't be a West Coast guy all your life and then go to of all places Michigan,
not a great
Detroit.
Job.
It's just a bad match, man. It was just a bad fit from the beginning. And what I don't like with the Jonathan Smith thing, it seemed like, man, they fired the guy and they had the replacement the same day. I mean, so they was thinking about firing him.
I don't think they gave him enough time, man.
2 years, yep. But man, I mean, I think they did him wrong, man.
I agree.
Think they did him wrong.
But I also think he's not complaining. $33 million on his way out the door. I did talk with some support staff at Michigan State on the football side, you know, in the last couple of weeks because I was trying to figure out, like, would Oregon State pivot back to Jonathan Smith? And I said, what's the vibe in the athletic department between football and administrators? And a source there at Michigan State told me awkward silence. And that's never good. You know, when you know you're getting fired and you know they're making a change and it's awkward and it's silent. But Jonathan Smith's problem was he should have, if he's going to leave Oregon State, leave with a plan. He left like his house was on fire, stopping off at Goodwill, as we all know. You know, leave with a plan. He could have ended up at Washington, would have been a better place for him. He could have ended up at UCLA, would have been a better place for him. Instead, it was any port in the storm and ended up in East Lansing. I've been to East Lansing. I covered the Big Ten. It's not a fun place to live. It's not a fun place to be. It's cold. It's miserable. It's not a great job among the 18 teams in the Big Ten. I'm not surprised it didn't work out. I thought he'd have a little more traction and a little more time. But the fans there, they've been through Mel Tucker. They've been through Larry Nassar. They're looking over at Tom Izzo going, he just wins. And so, you know, there's Jonathan Smith fired. And, you know, they fire him after Oregon State makes the hire. I thought that was interesting. I do think Oregon State was not in the mood for a Jonathan Smith reunion. I think if they probably could have, you know, messed with the timing a little bit. Leave it here. More of your phone calls, 503-417-7575.
Hello?
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
You know, this was a very challenging, difficult day. You know, we went through a lot last night with Keith Carter trying to figure out a way, you know, to make this playoff, you know, run work and be able to coach the team. And at the end of the day, that's his decision. And I totally respect that. I understand that decision. And, you know, so I just totally wish the team the best of luck, wish that I was coaching, but understand that it was a very challenging position for him and the Chancellor to be in, and totally respect that. So, you know, just really, really hope they play really well and go win the national championship.
Yep. Hope they play well. Hope you win a national championship. I wonder if that's what he sold him on when he was recruiting him to Ole Miss. Jonathan Smith got a raise to go to Michigan State. Lane Kiffin's getting a raise to go to LSU. We say all the time, you got to do what's best for your family. Mario Cristobal moving his family back to South Beach so he can be closer to his parents. You got to do what's best for you. You got to do what's best for your family. But at what point do we ask coaches to be loyal and keep their word? At what point should we anticipate some of these coaches to follow through and finish the season the way they tell their recruits to finish the season? I understand LSU is a better job. I understand that the portal is going to open here. Got a signing day coming up. There's an urgency to get this stuff done in the first week of December, because there is a penalty if you don't get it done, like you're behind. But I am disappointed for the fans in Mississippi who had a magical season and should have been enjoying it for the last few weeks. And all they've had a chance to do is wring their hands and feel a pit of anxiety in their gut, knowing that this is all fleeting and their coach is about to ditch on them. This is not one of the things that is good for college football. Lane Kiffin to LSU, the way it happened, not good. Does the calendar need to be adjusted? Absolutely. Should the football season be moved earlier? Sure. If you moved the football season, you said everybody's going to play week zero, we're going to get rid of championship games, start the playoff right away. Yes, the bowl season's going to get hammered for this, but national championship game will be played on January 1 every year. Now you've got the timing of things back in line in a way that could allow Lane Kiffin to finish the season. So, yes, the clock is part of the problem, but Lane Kiffin made a mess here. No way around it. 503-417-7575 is the phone number. Let's go to the phone lines. Michael is in New Mexico, where they're probably celebrating Jason Eck Day in New Mexico. Michael, what's on your mind?
I'm in New Mexico, but I'm a duck and not really a Lobo person. But Coach Eck would have been a great hire for the Beavers. You know what is sad, John, is the Ducks are ascending right now. They put the hammer down, at least defensively, on UW.
Yes.
Are very well positioned to make a deep run. They're peaking at the right time, and we're not even talking about that. We're talking about Lane Kiffin is a weenie. He's been a weenie since he was in college and will be a weenie when he leaves this earth. And as a Duck, I've been an Ole Miss fan's position. It's not fun to watch your girlfriend flirt with someone else, right, and then walk out the door. But can we, as no one is even talking about, you know, the great games, they need to fix this calendar. And I'm looking to you. Can you tell me, are we going to lose Stein and Lupoi? That looks imminent. But I would guess Lanning has enough control there to be like, you guys are going to coach through this playoff run. That would be a disaster, obviously, if they left right now. I mean, we're not even talking about that. We're just talking about how disgraceful Lane Kiffin is. And we've known that for 20 years, right?
here's the thing. I kind of think, thank you, Michael, in New Mexico. Here's the thing on Dan Lanning and this Will Stein. Will Stein potentially off to Kentucky. Tosh Lapoy potentially probably off to Cal. He's going to lose his coordinators at the end of the year. Dan Lanning knows that. Dan Lanning, I think, probably in his heart, in his brain, has planned for this. And I think he could probably upgrade at least with the D coordinator position. If I'm Dan Lanning, I kind of maybe you're sitting back going, okay, I've got what I needed out of these two guys. Remember, Kenny Dillingham turned into Will Stein. Tosh Lapoy's been there the whole time. I've kind of thought all along that Lapoy's a great recruiter, but could Oregon do better? Could they get a Jim Knowles type on the defensive side? You know, remember what Ohio State did and Penn State did, going out and getting a blue chip coordinator. Is it possible Justin Wilcox ends up as the D coordinator at Oregon? Like, where? Try that on. We'll see how that unfolds. I'm not worried for Oregon. I think Oregon's got the resources. It's a good job. Any coordinator takes that job knows he's going to be a head coaching candidate in 2 or 3 years. You're going to get the pick of the crop, and you're going to get a nice salary. But Oregon's win over Washington, we haven't talked about it. I want to talk about it coming up. 503-417-7575. Open phone lines. The floor is yours.
BFFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Well, the Ducks took care of business in Seattle. I don't know what you made of the game, but I'd love your phone calls on it. Here was the bottom line for me. You know, I sat there at Husky Stadium, softies down the way, got to deal with that. Few things struck me. Number one, a lot of Oregon fans at Husky Stadium on Saturday. There was a notable number of Duck fans who made the trip. Secondarily, Oregon had better athletes than Washington. I think Washington has closed the gap a little bit from last year to this year. But Oregon played circles around Washington. Better talent. I thought Oregon played about a B-minus game and won comfortably. There's never a point of that game on Saturday where I felt like Oregon was in any jeopardy of losing. And in the end, Dan Lanning, as I wrote in my column at johncanzano.com, Dan Lanning was kind of running around high-fiving people around the stadium after the game. It was kind of like he owned the place. I got to say, kind of like he owned the place. I know Jed Fish is the coach at Washington, but Dan Lanning looked very comfortable. Ducks looked comfortable. Ducks had better players, even though they're all banged up. They're on their, third or fourth receivers. And they had better athletes. They had better guys. Damon Williams Jr. running for his life out there. Now, the Washington fans are all frustrated. They're blaming play calling. They're blaming Jed Fish. They're saying, Damon Williams Jr. has regressed. Did you see the shots he was taking early in that game? I hardly think he could get his eyes up because he was on his back very early in that game. I'd love for people to talk about it at 503-417-7575. And here's the other thing. You talk about the way Ohio State handled Washington. You talk about the way that Michigan handled Washington. Oregon handled Washington the same way. Those three programs all defensively just completely shut Washington down. Physically dominant performance for Oregon, just like Ohio State, just like Michigan. For Washington fans who want to complain about not being in the upper echelon of the Big Ten, I almost called it the Pac-12. For Washington fans who are saying, hey, we deserve to be in that upper tier, your team's not playing like it. I do think Washington will be reactive. I think they will go out and say, we got to spend more money. We need better players. We need bigger players. Here's the other thing. It looked to me like a Big Ten team playing a Pac-12 team back in the day. Washington doesn't have that physicality yet. Oregon's got it. 503-417-7575. We got to talk Lane Kiffin. We got to talk Oregon State's hire of Jamarcus Shepherd, who will be introduced tomorrow. He'll be on the program tomorrow. Charlie in Vancouver's called in. I do have one line open at 417-7575. Grab it now. if you want to weigh in as well. Here's Charlie. Go ahead, Charlie.
John, first I wanted to touch on the topic that you guys have been talking about the most is Kiffin. Honestly, I feel comfortable enough to disagree with you once in a while, and I'm not a Kiffin fan, but I honestly think that the main portion of this should go to Mississippi as far as the blame. I guarantee you, and you know it too, that Kiffin, if he was allowed to stay in, I know that Steve Fisher kind of set that with Michigan when he took over for whoever left, Frieder, I think, to Arizona State years ago, and, hey, I want a Michigan guy coaching Michigan. Mississippi knew who they hired. They had to know there was a day when Kiffin was leaving. They could have bowed out gracefully here, too, and said, hey, let's go win the national championship, Lane. We're not rooting for you afterwards, but you gave us a commitment to stay here 4 years, or, you know, however many years. Yes, you're going to leave, but go win the national championship. I understand they're mad and angry and wanted to stick it to Kiffin, but I think it would have been better for the program. You know Kiffin was leaving either way. We both do. If they would have had a national championship or maybe a semifinal game that they went to this year and then bring in their new coach, I think they even have more money coming in, more national recognition, and they would have advanced more because their head coach and staff would have been there. Jonathan Smith, I think he's the happiest person in the world right now. He never looked happy from the day he took the job there or any minute on the sideline. I think whoever said bad fit, Roy, I think it was, yeah, that was an easy one to call. He probably never should have took that job, but, boy, now that he did, I bet he's glad that he's gone because he looked like he was going through hell there.
He looked like he aged to me. And I talked to him. Like, Jonathan's he's a different guy. I talked to him at Big Ten Media Day each of the last 2 years prior to the season. Stay in touch with him a little bit. He subscribes at johnconzano.com, so I know he's reading. And I'm not always kind to him in print, and I always appreciate, you know, like the people who do read me, who I write about, and I'm critical of them. And like I try to always be fair with people, but I always find it sort of I have respect for people who know that they're in a position where if they don't win and I criticize them, it's not personal. So I've always taken him that way. He's also walking with $33 million that they owe him. It's like Justin Wilcox at Cal. You know, Oregon State was trying to see if they could get Wilcox to take the job in Corvallis. But Wilcox is owed $10.8 million, and if he earns a dime in Corvallis, that's just a dime less that Cal pays him. There's an offset in his contract. Same for Jonathan Smith. I kind of think Smith might sit for a little bit. I don't think he's got the shine that he had when he was at Oregon State, and that's a problem for him. You know, there was a lot of shine on him in rebuilding Oregon State because he inherited an Oregon State team that was program was dead. And what happened? He won 10 games 4 years later, right? 10-2 and 10-3 and then 8-4. His last two seasons, there was some shine on Jonathan Smith. If he had been a little more patient, if he would listen to me, I would have told him, don't leave for just any job. Jake Dickert did the same damn thing. He went to Wake Forest. They leave for any old job out of fear, out of panic, out of, oh my gosh, I can't get stuck here. I actually think he would have cleaned up in the new world Pac-12. He would have been well positioned to get himself to the playoff. But I also think if he just sat tight a little bit, Clint Dowdle is his agent. By the way, Jimmy Sexton disciple, that's right, worked for CAA, was Jimmy Sexton's right-hand man. Clint Dowdle went off and started his own firm. He pulled a Jerry Maguire, and he took Jonathan Smith as a client with him. And Dowdle is the one who said, you know, this is the right job for you. And he jumped from Oregon State to Michigan State. Now looks like a terrible move for Jonathan Smith. Terrible move. And, you know, look, you got the money, but he's no longer going to be a candidate at a place like Washington or UCLA if those jobs, were open in front of him when he's available and interviewing. They're not even looking at him. So, you know, the right move for Smith is what? Go to a Group of Five job now? Or sit tight and become a coordinator? They could have. And here's the other thing. Do any of these coaches pay attention? Like, Jonathan Smith, I said this before, he's a subscriber. He reads me. I've written this story about Chip Kelly, Willie Taggart, Dennis Erickson, and Mike Riley, and I feel like I'm repeating myself like I'm my grandfather. telling stories at the Italian dinners that we had on Sundays. Like, I keep saying Dennis Erickson leaves Oregon State, goes to the NFL, gets his teeth kicked in, says biggest mistake of his career. Mike Riley leaves Oregon State, goes to the NFL, gets his teeth kicked in, comes back to Oregon State, leaves Oregon State again, goes to Nebraska, gets his teeth kicked in Nebraska. Both times Riley says, probably not a good move. Chip Kelly leaves Oregon. We know why. He had kind of done what he could do at 46-7 and getting to the national championship game. Leaves Oregon, goes to the NFL, gets fired, goes back to college ball, mediocre results at UCLA, leaves UCLA, gets an NFL job again with the Raiders, gets fired for a third time in the NFL. It doesn't work. It's never as good. They never are able to recapture the same kind of success. The only one that's been even remotely close, Willie Taggart leaves for Florida State, loses. The only one that's been remotely close is Mario Cristobal, who left Oregon, and at least he's had some success at Miami. Like, you know, it's not just a total face plant. He's not fired yet. At some point he will be, but not yet. And so I kind of look at all that and I go, is anybody paying attention? Because Jonathan Smith left after watching Willie Taggart and Chip Kelly and Dennis Erickson and Mike Riley do it and still said, I'm going to do it better than any of these guys. And know what? It didn't happen. Didn't work out. Got fired. Let's go to the phone lines. Ted's in Oregon City. Ted, welcome from the end of the Oregon Trail.
Oh, thanks, John. For the last year, I moved to the area, so I haven't been here more than a year. Anyway, I'd like to comment on your statement about the Washington-Oregon game. I think it was pretty close till the fourth quarter, wasn't it? 14-19 when Washington scored?
Yeah, it was, but did you ever feel like Washington was going to win that game? I never for a second felt that Washington was going to win that game.
I totally agree with you. I never did either. But I'm a Wisconsin Badger, and my Badgers beat Washington, and they're horrible. So Washington is not a good team. Ohio State beat them fairly easily, and Michigan, like you say, Washington yep. played nobody. And the only real tough game you guys that Oregon has had is against Indiana. USC is not good. Iowa, they were actually lucky to beat Iowa and Iowa City. That field goal at the end of the game, that's what saved them. So I think that we're a little bit, I think Oregon's a great team. I think they have a great coach, but I don't think they should be overrated because they beat Washington. Washington is not, I don't feel that Washington is good. Like I say, lost to my Badgers. They scored 7 points. And so we'll see. I think Oregon needs to be worried, even if they play someone like Notre Dame. If they play Notre Dame or anybody in the SEC, it's going to be a tough game, even if they play them at home. So that's my comment, and that's all I have to say.
Yeah, and I think it's a fair point. Like I said this to Softy. Steven, you're going to love this. Softy came up to me. I'm writing my column. This is what people who aren't writers do after the game. He's a radio guy, only a radio guy. I say that with respect. But I'm over there writing, and Softy comes up to me, and he's like, hey, I don't think Oregon's very good. I don't think they're very good. And I was like, I said, they didn't play their best game. They just won pretty easily. I said, I think they're good. I don't think that they're great. I actually think there's only three teams in college football that I think are really good. That's Ohio State, Georgia, and Indiana. I think everybody else that's going to be in this playoff is just good. And I include Oregon in that. But I don't think Oregon's going to play any of those teams because they're going to be a 5 seed or maybe even slip into the 4 seed. Oregon has a 5 seed. Won't play those teams until maybe the semifinals. And so I actually think the ceiling for Oregon this season is I think they can get to the semifinals. And if they get to the semifinals against anybody but Ohio State, I think they might have a chance. I'm just saying. Steven, what's the ceiling for Oregon's season?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think semifinals is a legitimate thought process you can have. I mean, it's going to be based off the actual bracket. Like we're only in the second year into the CFP, but when we think into the NCAA tournament, you always have to think of the path. Like some teams have easier paths to the Final Four than others. Last year, Penn State had a very easy path. They got to the semifinal, almost beat Notre Dame to get to the national championship game. They probably weren't the second best team in the nation, but they had a very easy path. I think you're right. If Oregon gets the same type of path, they could get to the semifinals. And you know, I do think this Oregon team is good, but I agree with the caller. Like, that Washington team is not very good. Anytime they've played, stepped up in competition, they have looked pedestrian. They've got pushed around, and they aren't a very good team. And so, like, yes, I was impressed by Oregon going on the road and winning, but it was more of a, you know, I looked at Washington, I thought they're not very good. It wasn't that I was super impressed with Oregon. I thought Oregon went in, did what they had to do, get in, get out, get the win. But I think it's more on Washington. I think this team is really far away from even trying to compete for like a CFP spot or even a top 25 spot. Like, I think they're closer to trying to make it to the top 25 than they would be even to get the CFP. Like, they're not even close. And I just think this Washington team, like, those fans would not have been mad had Jed Fish taken that Florida job. Like, I think they would have been happy and they're like, we can get better. But now you're kind of stuck with Jed Fish again and see what happens when they roll back.
Do you think that Washington can ever get to the upper echelon of the Big Ten? Because it's not my job really to write a column that's specific to Washington fans, but I felt like I left the stadium. I walked with Stofty to the parking lot. Okay. And, you know, he's walking and he's kind of lamenting like the game, and they're talking about Jed. They're talking about, you know, Damon Williams Jr. And, you know, I'm not going to tell you the two guys walking with him yet, but the conversation, because it was two former Washington Husky players, and the conversation is very much about, you know, where Washington was. All right, it's Greg Lewis and Mario Bailey. Okay, so who are walking out with him? Okay, and so they're asking me. They said, "How far away do you think Washington is?" You know, and I said, I don't feel like you're that close to Oregon even. I don't think you're that close to Ohio State, not to Michigan, not even to Oregon. I think there's a gap. And I don't know if Jed Fish can close that gap, and I don't know if the next hire can close that gap. How far away is Washington?
I think that they're very far away. I think that they can – in the portal era, you can go out and get players, right? Like, I think you can look at your team, and I think Damon Williams is a very talented quarterback. You do have to keep him upright because he's very small in stature. He's not the big guy. And when he's running around, like, he is dangerous. But at the same time, you want to keep him in the pocket, let him dictate when he scrambles, when he's on the run, not make him have to run because he's getting chased around. So I think they have the right quarterback. They've gone out and they've gotten some pieces, but I just don't, not consistently. Consistently, they're not going to be able to put out a winning team that is, you know, competing for CFP bursts. I think you can get it every once in a while if you get the right combination of players, you get the right schedule, because there's so many teams in the Big Ten. Maybe you avoid an Ohio State, you avoid a Michigan, all you have to face is Oregon, and maybe you're 11-1 on the year and you can get to the CFP, but it's not going to be consistently.
Like Greg Lewis, by the way, who was a like Pac-10 offensive player of the year in like 1990, Doak Walker Award winner, like, you know, a really good running back by college standards. And Mario Bailey, you know, who was a first team all conference player there. Those guys are walking and they've been there all day. It's a long day. I could feel how demoralized they were about the performance against Oregon, because I think their hope was, oh, they were playing at home. Oregon's playing a little shorthanded in the receiving core. And I think what they were looking for, if it wasn't a win, they were looking for a little bit of hope. And I don't know if it's there if you're a Washington fan.
I agree. I just don't know what you can grasp that you've seen this in the last 2 years and say, look, this is sustainably, you can build this up. Like, I think it's fine. You can get really good players, but to compete at the top of the Big Ten is going to be tough year in and year out. You just don't have the resources that Ohio State has or Michigan or Oregon, maybe not even Penn State. So, like, to consistently compete at that level, you just don't have those resources, and it's going to be a struggle every year in and year out. But I will say, like, you can do it. You just have to get the right things, and it has to be, you know, just a strike of lightning that says, look, okay, we can compete every year. Because even Indiana has more resources than you do now.
Meanwhile, Will Stein, it looks like, is finalizing a deal to become Kentucky's next head coach. Stein with Oregon as an offensive coordinator. How does that impact Oregon's season? How does that impact Oregon's potential playoff run? We watched, you know, Kenny Dillingham call plays for an Oregon team in a Civil War, and it didn't go well. And so I am kind of left looking at Will Stein to Kentucky and going, this potentially harms Oregon. There's going to be so much talk. I can tell you this, in the next 7 to 10 days, there's going to be a lot of talk about the calendar of college football and how it needs to change. After the anger with Lane Kiffin dies down, it'll now become the calendar's messed up.
The thing about Wilson also, DeSean Jackson, if you saw him today, former Cal receiver, he put his opinion that says Tosh Lupoi should be the next Cal coach.
Yeah.
He tweeted that out. So Oregon going into the playoff, maybe without their two coordinators going into it. How does that affect them?
I think if long-term, down deep, I think Dan Lanning will be fine. But for this season, that's an impact. That's a problem because I don't care. I don't care how committed you are. Jamarcus Shepherd committed to coaching the wide receivers at Alabama, right? Except, you know, on Sunday, what's he doing? You know, he's busy trying to build his roster for Oregon State, which he should. Like, you know, he's trying to juggle. He's trying to say, okay, I need to do my job here at Alabama, but I simultaneously need to think about my real job, the next job that that people will judge me on and I can get fired for. So, look, I think it's really interesting to see Will Stein to Kentucky. How does that impact Oregon's postseason? We'll dive deep on it, plus punch and audio coming up. You got the BFT statewide on the Bald Faced Truth Radio Network.
Back to the Bald Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
We had a really good interview with Will Stein on this show earlier this season. Here's that Stein is headed to Kentucky as offensive coordinator.
He played at Louisville, big-time rivals.
Now the head coach at Kentucky. Good for him and good for his family. I think if you are, like, as Dan Lanning told me last week, you know, he wants opportunities for these guys, but he's also telling his coaches that they've got to finish their job. They've got to do their job. In fact, I asked him specifically how he handles his coaches getting interviewed and getting offers. So Stein gone to Kentucky, Tosh Lupoi probably going to Cal. Here's Lanning's philosophy, and I asked this for a reason, right? I wasn't just stabbing in the dark.
Yeah, the first thing I always tell them is just remind you that the reason this opportunity came is because you're really good at your job. Let's not sacrifice what you're doing great here, because that's going to limit your opportunities down the road. So let's be elite where we're at, and when there's time outside of that you can touch base with other people, I want you to be able to reach those opportunities. And that's a really big goal for me. If it makes sense for our coaches, and it's an opportunity that they're interested in, I want them to be able to go get that. That for me, when it's all said and done, will be one of the biggest measures of my success, is guys that I was able to help create success for down the road. But ultimately, all of us have had unbelievable focus this week in preparation. And, you know, the timing of the calendar is pretty crazy, the way it all sorts out. It is a little bit of what it is, but our guys handle it like champs. And, you know, the other piece of that is a lot of our coaches, even though there might be opportunities to come their way consistently year in and year out, they say, you know what, that's not the right opportunity for me. And they keep moving. And that's because they recognize it, you know, it doesn't necessarily check every box for them.
Yeah. Look, question is, does Will Stein stick around and call the plays for the playoffs? Is it different for a coordinator? I kind of wonder what Oregon will do with Lupoi seemingly, maybe, probably headed to Cal, and Will Stein headed to Kentucky. Will they finish their job? Do you want those guys to stick around and finish their job? To me, it depends on what Dan Lanning wants, because if he feels like there's a comfort with Stein calling the plays and Stein could stick around and call the plays, you do that. But how in the world do you get a coordinator to stick around and call the plays while he's worried about getting guys in the portal? And I just wonder about sort of the I wonder about the impact on Oregon's postseason that this is all going to have. And so, you know, maybe it won't matter because maybe they'll get a first-round game against North Texas, who, oh, by the way, lost their coach. So I think the storyline when the bracket comes out tomorrow is going to be, let's circle all of the teams that are impacted by coaching changes in this carousel. Let's go to Vanita. Jim, welcome to the show. Jim, what's up?
Hey, John, thanks for taking my call today. How you doing?
I'm well.
Hey, what can you tell me about freshman wide receiver for Oregon, DeCorian Moore?
Yes.
Of course, they don't, you know, it's not like the NFL where you get an injury report printed every week. What's going on, and do you think we'll see him before the season ends?
Yeah, I thought Dan Lanning was cryptic at best yesterday when talking about DeCorian Moore. And I want to parse his language out a little bit, but you know, the fact that Oregon could potentially benefit by not maybe needing him in the opening round, you know, let me just let me pull his exact quote out. He said, he didn't know, but it was the expression on his face, didn't know about his status. But I think there's a real chance here that not just DeCorian Moore, by the way, Malik Benson has been fantastic. Jeremiah McClellan, almost the, it was the non-catch of the season. Jamari Johnson, great. I don't need to talk about, you know, the Kenyon Sadiq, who's a freak, but Gary Bryant Jr., who's been dealing with his ankle injury since week 11 against Iowa. Love to see him back. DeCorian Moore. It was just kind of the smirk that Lanning did. Like, Steven, you know Lanning can't help himself. Sometimes he knows stuff he doesn't, can't keep back, and he can't help himself. I think they want and know that DeCorian Moore can get back at some point. Can he get back for a quarterfinal round game? Can he get back for a semifinal round game? Could he be back for an opening round game at home? To be determined. I don't want to say anything, but here's the other thing. Can Dante Moore throw Kenyon Sadiq a pass that he doesn't have to lay out for full throttle? I mean, how many times this year have you seen that?
It was, it was an amazing almost catch, though, in the end zone.
Yeah, but I kind of feel like, you know how when we go on vacation and the kids are at a swimming pool, I'll get a football or a ball and I'll say to the kids, get a running start and jump over the pool and I'll throw the ball and you lay out for it. I kind of feel that's the game that Dante Moore is playing with Kenyon Sadiq all the time. Like, he's just going, let me see if I can throw it a foot out of his reach and see if he can actually catch this.
Well, like, when I was a kid, I would tell my dad, like, hey, throw me a diver, you know? Like, yes. I want to dive for it. Like, you know what? If you're getting Sadiq, maybe you want divers, maybe you don't. Probably don't. You'd rather just have the catch. But you talk about the receivers, John. What about Evan Stewart, too? Like, Evan Stewart should come back as well. Like, the Ducks are going to have, like, six receivers, maybe seven receivers that are, like, you know, can play on this level and play at a high level. Like, this
Malik Benson is really, I mean, he's just the fastest guy on the field, I think.
He's incredible. Yeah, that, you know, that deep touchdown pass he had against Washington was huge. The punt return the week before against USC. Like, they got weapons. So this Ducks team could actually be better offensively as long as they got the play call right. Like, Will Stein's there. We'll see how it works. If he's not there, do they have the trust to, you know, weave all these players in there?
Lanning is asked about DeCorian Moore, Evan Stewart, Gary Bryant Jr. after the Washington game. He said, they're all healthy now, so we're good. And then he paused and he said, I don't know. And when he paused, he was kind of, he made this funny expression. He's kind of smirking, like, you know, like, I'm going to tell you, almost. Like, that was the expression. I would think they're going to get at least one, maybe two of those guys back in some form or fashion. And DeCorian Moore is the guy. I would love to see Evan Stewart get back because I think he lost so much of his season. It's a shame what happened because he was supposed to be the guy. But I'm looking at DeCorian Moore going, that's the guy that if you're going to play Ohio State or you're going to play Indiana again or you're going to get in there against Georgia, that's the guy you need out there.
Well, think back to the Penn State game, John. DeCorian Moore had a couple of huge catches. One, I believe, on a fourth down where they went deep to him. Like, he's the difference maker. Like, you have really good players. Like, he's the difference maker on this Ducks team. And you're right. You're going to need him when you face an Ohio State, when you face an Indiana again in the College Football Playoff.
And it's why when the bracket comes out tomorrow, and I kind of want to leave tomorrow's show, you know, probably maybe from about 4:20, 4:25 on in tomorrow's show, because the bracket will come out and we'll get the full picture of the bracket around 4:20, right? That's usually what happens. It takes about 20 minutes for the bracket to get fully revealed. So the bracket will be out, and I'll probably leave the last hour and a half of tomorrow's show just open, because I think we're going to get an indication of whether or not Oregon is going to be a 5 seed or, you got to watch these conference championship games because the committee might slip Oregon in front of one of these other teams and Oregon ends up as a 4 seed. Do you have a preference? Do you want to buy if you're Dan Lanning? Or do you want the home game against what would probably be Tulane or North Texas to open if you're the 5 seed? I want the home game. I want the tune-up game because I don't need DeCorian Moore. I don't need Evan Stewart back. I just need my guys to play a game, go out and get a win. They will beat that team and should beat that team the way they kind of beat Washington.
I mean, I don't care. I don't think it was much of a difference had the Oregon played last year in the first round or if they played in the second round. Like, I think they once they face Ohio State...
You're saying Ohio State was a different animal.
Right. They were going to win anyway. So I don't think that... I think it was it's a very easy excuse to use that Oregon, you know, the bye week hurt them a whole bunch. I don't know. I don't buy that. So I don't think it matters whether Oregon plays that first round or second round or to get the quarterfinal game. I think as a fan, I would love to watch Oregon host an Alabama, Oregon host a Miami, Oregon host even a Tulane or a James Madison. I would love to see Autzen Stadium college football playoff game. I think just from from my point of view, watching that would be a lot of fun. But as a team, like, I don't think it really matters if you're playing in the first round or the quarterfinal. It matters on what your matchup is, and that's what I think is going forward.
I am a little different. I think Ohio State beats anybody last year, but I do think Oregon didn't look the same. Oregon looked flat to me. And I think some of that had to do with Ohio State, but I think some of that had to do with Oregon just being flat. And I don't want a repeat of that. And I am concerned that the defections of Will Stein, the possible defection of Tosh Lupoi, who could end up at Cal, a lot of people think it's done. And that Lupoi is just waiting, and the UC system is such a mess that he has to get formalized. They have to post the job. They have to do some things at Cal that you don't have to do at LSU and other places. That people are just kind of waiting. Is it possible they lose both coordinators? Is it possible that the play callers on the offensive and defensive side are gone? And if that's the case, Stephen, I want a trial run. I want a first round game where I can get a new play caller. You know, if you're stepping up, you know, one of your other defensive coaches to call the defense, I want them to have a game before they get in there and they get into the real games against, you know, a Texas Tech maybe in the second round and then a possible semifinal against Georgia or Ohio State. And I kind of think that's where the ceiling is for Oregon. I think it's in the semifinal round. And I'll say this with a caveat. If Oregon ends up in a semifinal round game against Indiana, that's the game I kind of want to see. I don't know if they're going to get it, but that's the game I want to see. Because if it's Georgia or Ohio State, I just don't think Oregon can win that game.
I agree with you. I think Indiana would be the one team I would want to face. Stay far away from Ohio State. They looked incredible against Michigan. But to your point, if Will Stein is calling the offense, I would love to have that first game. I can buy that. I can buy that argument, but that may not be the case. As Pete Thamel just tweeted out, per source, Stein's expected to call Oregon's offense throughout the season, throughout the college football playoff, as he'll juggle both jobs for Oregon and Kentucky.
There you go. That's good stuff. Will Stein off to Kentucky, but again, are we getting Will Stein? Are we getting kind of the Kenny Dillingham has one foot on the plane to Tempe play calling? You know, you remember what that game did, that point spread did right before that Civil War? You know, it was like Oregon was like a narrow favorite in that game. And all of a sudden, Oregon State was favored by like 5 or 6 points. Jonathan Smith, I told you this before, Jonathan Smith came out of the Oregon State locker room and he saw me on the sideline. He walked right to me. And he said, "What's going on with the point spread?"
Well, that is a good point. Like, how difficult would it be to call an offensive game plan while also trying to get a Kentucky program off and running again? Like, is that doable? Yeah. Do you want that if you're an Oregon fan?
Can I send you a picture during the commercial break?
I would love it.
That my photographer took during the Oregon-Washington game. I intentionally did not put this out there because this photograph, my photographer took a picture of Will Stein during the game, and he's holding the Oregon play sheet in front of his face. And my photographer's just taken a great photo, you know? And the thing that struck me, though, was I zoomed in on the play sheet, and it gives you an idea of how complex what Oregon is doing offensively gets. And I don't think that I'd be giving away state secrets here, because if teams just wanted to take pictures of the coordinators on the sideline, they could do that. And they could very easily get, They could very easily get the goods by looking at the play sheet. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to send this to you, Stephen. I'm going to text it to you during the commercial break. And I'm going to post this photograph on my Twitter and my Instagram. And what I want you to do, if you're a listener, I'll also put it on Blue Sky. If you're a listener, I want you to zoom in on the play sheet in front of Will Stein's face. I want you to look at what's written on the play sheet. I want you to look at the terminology. I want you to look at the play calls. I want you to look at, you know, and you tell me, is this going to be a guy who's locked in and focused like he is there? Or is this going to be, a guy who's got the Kenny Dillingham 1 foot out the door thing? Look at it on my Twitter, at John Canzano BFT, on Instagram, at John Canzano. And, Stephen, I'm going to send it to you during the commercial break. We'll talk about it coming back, but get a look at it. I'll do it in like 30 seconds. You got the BFT. Leave it here.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Well, Stephen, I don't know if you were able to zoom in on that photo that I have tweeted out and put on Instagram in a number of different ways, but can you see it very closely? Can you see what Will Stein's play sheet in front of his face says? Can you zoom in on it?
I definitely can, and it says, take the easy money, run to win.
Take the easy money. Now, he's written that on his play sheet, take the easy money, which means take what the defense gives you, right? That's how I'm interpreting that. Run to win. And then I start looking at his play calls. I mean, you can really drill down and look what he's got it literally itemized. Third down and one, 1.8 per game. Fourth down conversions against cover one and cover three. Here's a certain play he wants. Third and four, third and seven, any kind of sequence. Third and one, third and two, third and four, third and seven. He's got everything in front of him ready to go. He got as the play that he wants. But I love that little note he wrote to himself at the top of the play sheet. Take the easy money and run to win. But I'm looking at those plays there, Stephen. You can't replace that easily. You can't replace a guy who's been working in that and dealing with that kind of play call, situational play. You can't. It changes who you are as a team if you try to bring somebody in to call the offense. I think the defense is a little different. I do question how much of the defense Tosh Lapoy has been calling by himself. And I think Dan Lanning kind of has a role in what goes on with the defense anyway. But I think you need Will Stein to be there if you're Oregon.
Yeah, I think if you want to get to where your ultimate goal is, that's to win a national championship, Will Stein has to be there. But there is still a potential downside of it's hard to focus on two full-time gigs like this. Like Lanning said in that clip you played, John, like, don't forget what got you there, and that's because you're doing a good job. Well, can he put 100% effort into being the offensive coordinator and 100% into the Kentucky head coach? Because you know Kentucky fans are going to say, look, we're paying you all this money Coach Will Stein. Let's get this roster on an SEC level. So I think that's going to be tough to do both. But at the same time, like you can't run out a new offensive coordinator and expect to get to where you want to go. So it's a really tough pickle that the Ducks are in. But you kind of really, I don't think you have a choice. Like you let Will Stein do it, and you hope that he can do both.
Will Stein expected to call the plays at Oregon during the college football playoff. Pete Thamel reporting that. Let's go to the phone lines. We have Pat, who is on McLaughlin Boulevard, and he's going to give us a traffic report. Pat, how's the traffic out there?
Well, it's fairly busy, but not too bad.
What's on your mind?
Hey, John. I'm trying to play the pragmatist here.
Okay.
I don't understand why people complain about coaches leaving.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get it because nobody says anything about coaches getting fired. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think there's any loyalty one way or the other, personally.
And some of that loyalty is also rooted in the idea that, I had this exact conversation with a staff member at Michigan State before. It was the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, the day before Thanksgiving. And I said, what's the vibe like in the athletic department? And the person said, it is an awkward silence. And I said, what don't fans understand? And they go, they don't understand that, like, everybody's mad that he left Oregon State. Guess what? They're going to fire him on Thanksgiving morning if he is not producing. And they're like, but here's the thing. When you sign on to coach a team, you sign on to play for a team, you sign on to do something, people do expect you, you know, to see it through. And I think there is a issue with the calendar, sure. But I think it is refreshing when you see a guy like Brent Vegan at Montana State who says, hey, I want to stay and coach my team through the playoff. If that means I can't take the job at Oregon State, I don't take it. You know, that's show business, show friends. But I do think that loyalty still matters. But I understand the hypocrisy of it, and I understand the absurdity of it because these guys do get fired. Let's go to Tony. This is how long I've been doing this show. Here comes Tony. Welcome, Tony.
Hey, John. Thank you for the welcome. I've been around from day one with you, so your listeners know. So is the image telling or is it a fable? It's what's on the other side that matters. Could it say that we're going to kick them in the teeth and shove it down their throat? Or could it say pass, 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 pass? Happy holidays, John.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. If Will Stein is calling the plays at Oregon or not calling the plays, does it matter that much against North Texas or Tulane in the opening round? Probably not, because North Texas and Tulane, guess what? Both have lost their coaches. Eric Morris leaving North Texas for Oklahoma State, and Tulane's coach has gone to Auburn. There's problems in a lot of places in the bracket. I think the bracket's going to come out tomorrow, and people are going to circle the teams on the bracket. Let's see. Ole Miss has a problem. Oregon has a problem. Tulane or North Texas have a problem. And they're going to start going down the teams going, and here's the day that's coming. Like, no one's talking about this, but it's not just the coaches leaving. Which team will be the first to have a quarterback say, I can't play in the playoff because I'm getting in the portal? Because everybody thinks that the playoff is the end-all, be-all for all these players. I have news for you. Some of these players, the end-all, be-all for them is how much money are they getting in NIL and what promises are being made for next year.
What almost happened last year with Nico Iamaleava, John. Like, that was the whole thing of why he left Tennessee, is that he wanted a new contract and he held out right before the Ohio State game. They figured it out so he could play. But I don't think you're wrong. I think you're not far off from seeing some guys say, look, I'm not playing the CFP.
I think it'll be very interesting to see what the reaction is. And I'm telling you, it's already happening on social media. I thought it would be a day. I said next 7 to 10 days, we're going to hear so much about the calendar. Lane Kiffin and people's anger at Lane Kiffin is going about to dissipate because the news cycle has given us even more hires and even more changes. And it's going to become a story at Oregon because Will Stein and Tosh Lapoy probably both going off to take jobs. They're going to go do their thing with their new schools, and they're going to be busy trying to get their rosters together. And they have a signing day coming. And oh, by the way, you got to call plays because guess what? They're playing Indiana in the semifinal. Got a game plan, guys. So I think it'll be a big, big, big storyline. As things unfold. So Will Stein, good for him, though. I mean, like, look, it's his dream to be a head coach in major college football. He's going to be a head coach of an SEC program, you know, and Mitch Barnhart could probably tell him a thing or two about Kentucky. Meanwhile, did you see Sunday Night Football? How about Marcus Mariota mixing it up against Bo Nix in a game that damn near ended in a tie, 27-26, Denver walks away with a win. That was kind of a ringing endorsement with two touchdown passes for Mariota and 300-plus passing yards and one touchdown pass for Bo Nix. That was not a bad endorsement for Oregon football, Stephen, last night on Sunday Night Football.
No, it wasn't. And we've talked about Mariota, about how valuable he is, like, as a quarterback and how he might be the best backup quarterback in the NFL. I think if you're the Commanders, you didn't want to go into the game having Marcus Mariota throw 50 times. But you know what? He can do it, and he did it, and he almost won the game over a Denver Broncos team, who's the number one team in the AFC. Now, I think the Broncos, that's a different conversation. I think the Broncos are a little fraudulent. But at the same time, Marcus Mariota said...
Why would you say they're fraudulent? Because I think a lot of the NFL is the same as what we were talking about in college football. Like, very few teams that you look at and you go, oh my gosh, that team could win a Super Bowl.
The funny thing is, I actually had that conversation with a couple of friends. I texted them. I'm like, who's actually good in the NFL? And we couldn't come up with anybody. But I just don't think that, I don't think Sean Payton necessarily trusts Bo Nix enough to like let him go through with the offense and make plays to win. Cause I don't know if Bo Nix can necessarily do it at this point in his career. Now the defense is for sure a Super Bowl contending defense. But I do feel like in the playoffs, you need your offense to do something, unless you have an all-timer defense like the Baltimore Ravens and Trent Dilfer, or the Denver Broncos when they had Peyton Manning, when they won their Super Bowl. I don't know that these defenses are that far ahead as those teams are. So I don't trust the Broncos to go and win games in the postseason when they have to.
I think that all of these sports have turned into an amalgam of teams that are just okay or good, and everybody wanting to be 8-8. The NBA, the NFL, college football. There are a couple teams where I go, oh my gosh, they're really, really good and they're talented, and this is a team that really looks like a contender start to finish. And then there's a whole bunch of teams, and maybe TV has done this, because what do they want? They want compelling games. They want one-score games. They want everything to be competitive. They want everyone to feel like they have a chance. Why? So the maximum audience will tune into games. And I felt that way watching Sunday Night Football a little bit, because it was almost like this is exactly what the NFL wants. Two teams that are so even that it feels like this is going to be a tie game all the way to the end. And it was entertaining to watch it from that perspective. But I kind of felt that way in watching college football over the weekend, going, okay, Oregon's good. But does Oregon look like to me that they can win a national championship? No. I don't think they can get by Ohio State, Georgia, and maybe not Indiana either. Maybe not Notre Dame either. Like, there might be four teams that are better than Oregon. But Oregon's in there. It'll be fun to watch them in the opening round and in the quarterfinals, and then we'll see in the semifinals. But I kind of look around the bracket, and I'm like, okay, who looks great? Ohio State looks great, but who else? 5 at 5's coming up. You got the bald-faced truth. I want you to leave it here. We'll take you right into Monday Night Football.
BFFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
I love our advertisers and our sponsors, and I love our donors of the BFT Foundation. And, you know, I got to give a shout out today to the guys at The Wall, buythewall.com. Rick's team at The Wall, they're doing a project for me right now. These guys have been out here, and weather's not good some days, weather's good other days. Big time sports fans, of course, and longtime supporters of this show. Shout out to them. Also, Mark at Wilsonville Carpet and Tile. Fist bump to Mark. That guy, all he's doing is running a business that has been in their family since like the 40s. And longtime supporter of BFT Foundation. Always there for the celebrity golf tournament. Always there when kids in the community need something. But also, diehard college football fan. I heard from him over the weekend as Oregon was beating Washington and in Oregon State. Do we need to talk about it, or do we treat it like Bruno? But Mark at Wilsonville Carpet and Tile. That's why we're getting our carpet. We moved into our house like so long ago. I'm embarrassed to even say how old the carpet is. And we're using Wilsonville Carpet and Tile to replace all of the carpet. Mark and the team there doing a great job. And I feel good about it. Because why? Because Mark steps up every year and they support the BFT Foundation, as does First Call Heating and Cooling, as does the Shoe Mill Shoe Stores, as does Gresham Ford, as does Milwaukee Lumber, as does The Wall, who I mentioned earlier. Longtime supporters, all of these companies. I don't just talk about them on the show. They actually, you know, I use them, and they are strong, avid supporters of the Bald Face Truth Foundation. So I want to give a shout out to all them, plus all the listeners out there who go to baldfacetruth.org this final month of 2025, and will make a tax deductible donation to the nonprofit, helping kids in art, music, education, athletics. But shout out to all those sponsors. Did I use shout out too much in the last couple of minutes? Let me just give a nod to all those companies. But Mark at Wilsonville Carpet and Tile was on my mind because he was texting me over the weekend. He was watching the Beavers game, and he was like, how did, and he said we, because he must be a Beaver fan. He said, how did we ever beat Washington State? Well, tomorrow you will introduce Jamarcus Shepherd, the new coach at Washington State. We'll see him on the show tomorrow, so I hope you tune in for it. All right, Steven's got the five biggest, baddest stories in sports. We're going to lead you right into Monday Night Football. Let's do it.
The five at five. Number one.
Well, let's start right there, John. Some wacky coaching carousels is happening right now. Jamarcus Shepherd, he is the new head coach at Oregon State. Of course, co-offensive coordinator, wide receivers coach at Alabama. He will head the Beavs. This just broke during the show. Oregon State offensive coordinator Will Stein, he is heading to Kentucky to be their new head coach. James Madison coach Bob Chesney, he's emerged as UCLA's top target. UCLA said he can still coach in the CFP if James Madison makes it, but Chesney to UCLA, love that hire for UCLA. I think that's a great one. Lane Kiffin, he's heading over to LSU. He will not coach Ole Miss in the College Football Playoff. Former Beav Jonathan Smith, he's out at Michigan State. Pat Fitzgerald, the former Northwestern coach, is the new man in East Lansing. I think that's not a very good move. I think it's a lateral move at best. Kalani Sitake, the BYU coach, he is emerging as a top target for Penn State now.
Oh, boy.
But Crumble Cookie CEO and BYU donor Jason McGowan, who we've talked about, is a big fan of BYU. He tweeted out.
Say that again.
Crumble Cookie. CEO. BYU donor Jason McGowan. He tweeted out that some people are not replaceable. Sounds like it's time for me to get off the sidelines and get to work. So he put a message out to there hoping Sitake does not take the Penn State job. But wacky times here in college football.
I actually think Kalani Sitake should stay right at BYU. I think he could strum his guitar and win games there. I think that's the right move. But how many crumble cookies, you know, can he get? Lifetime supply? By the way, I like a crumble cookie as much as the next person. I don't know that I can eat a whole crumble cookie, though. Steven, they're rich. I'm more like, let's cut it in four. That's kind of where I'm at with the crumble cookies.
I'm with you on that one.
Number two.
Well, how about this? We talked about some college basketball players coming back from playing professional and all that kind of stuff to be NCAA eligible. Well, 25-year-old rapper Najur Granger, he goes by the name, stage name of Tusi, he is committed to play football at Syracuse, 25 years old. Granger, he made those plans known that he was taking a break.
What are we doing here?
He was a multi-platinum artist. Okay. I don't know his songs, but he was training in Raleigh at NC State. He apparently played football in high school. He's not currently ranked as a recruit, but he should have full eligibility after not playing college football previously. So 25-year-old freshman, he could be playing all the way until he's 30 in the NCAA. Also goes with former overseas basketball player Nathaniel Salmon. He played in Australia. He attended minicamp with the Chargers this year before gaining NCAA eligibility. He has gotten official visits from BYU, Arizona State, and Utah. But it's not only happening in basketball, John. It's happening in football as well. I mean, this Salmon guy, he was in the minicamp with the Los Angeles Chargers. That's professional. But now he's getting looks from all these top schools in the Big 12. I hate where we're going here.
Yeah, the NCAA's lost control. I wish they wouldn't have. I wish they would have been smarter. I wish they would have been better. None of this is good for the game, and they were in charge of the game. Shame on them.
Number three.
Well, the Eagles lost on Black Friday to the Chicago Bears, and the offense has looked pretty poor over in Philadelphia, even with all the talent. And offensive coordinator Kevin Petullo, his house was vandalized because of it. Fans attacked his house after the Eagles lost on Black Friday, according to multiple reports. Now, there was a viral video that was initially posted on TikTok saying that rocks were being thrown at Petullo's house in Moorestown, New Jersey, but police confirmed they were just throwing eggs not rocks, and the resin still not okay. The incident occurred around 2:50 a.m. Eastern Time on November 29th, and that was just hours after the Eagles lost 24-15 to the Chicago Bears. And, of course, the offense has been pretty bad for Philadelphia, actually, last couple weeks, but still doesn't give you the right to go egg the offensive coordinator's house.
Yeah, no good. Don't like it. It's a game. This is not what it's supposed to be about. There's often a thin stripe of people who don't get it. I don't like that. But, you know, keep it normal. Do what's normal. I always come back to that. Be normal. But do people who are abnormal, do they know they're abnormal?
But does it shock you that it's Eagles fans? Just saying.
No, but I'm sure there's weirdos and people who lose touch in all fan bases.
Number four.
Well, some good and bad news for the Los Angeles Chargers as they won last week. They beat the Raiders on Sunday 31-14. They moved to 8-4 right in the middle of the playoff race. But their star quarterback and former Duck, Justin Herbert, he underwent surgery today to stabilize a fracture in his left hand. Now, good thing it's his left hand, not his throwing hand. The Chargers released a statement today that said Herbert's return to play is considered day-to-day. His status for next Monday's game against Philadelphia will be determined later in the week. But, man, I tell you what, the Chargers have had a lot of injury troubles this year, John. They cannot afford to have Justin Herbert be out of any type of games. But, again, luckily, it's his left hand. We saw last week Aaron Rodgers, he played with, a splint on his left hand as well. Didn't play well. But, it still seems like Herbert's going to play. And they're right in the middle of the race, 8-4. But, man, just to have to go surgery early in the week, then play next week seems like it'd be tough.
It's a lot. It's asking a lot. He's a guy that at the beginning of the year, I thought he could have an MVP-type year if he stayed healthy. That is a big if in the NFL when you play that position.
Number five.
We are heading out early for Monday Night Football. It's not a great game. It's the Giants versus the Patriots, 2-10 versus 10-2. But it may be a little more intriguing as Jackson Dart, the Giants star rookie quarterback, is active and playing for the G-Men, going up against Drake May and the Patriots. Drake May, second in MVP voting in the odds, right behind Matthew Stafford. Maybe with a big game. Stafford lost to the Panthers. Maybe a big game from May. He might be the MVP favorite. So sort of intriguing, at least now, with Jackson Dart playing for the Giants.
There you go. You have a Monday night game, as you have... for people who are interested in, the NFL, it always has storylines. It feels like there's never a shortage of storylines in the NFL. Tomorrow on the show, Jamarcus Shepherd, the new Oregon State coach, will dive deep on Will Stein and Tosh Lapoy. Oregon possibly without two play callers heading to the postseason. I also think, the timing of the calendar for college football is going to be a storyline moving forward. I think that will be for the foreseeable future. I think we're going to hear a lot about it. CFP rankings are out tomorrow. I'm trying to figure out where to put Shepherd in the show tomorrow. Probably might try to have him at 4:00, right? Into the teeth of the rankings release, but we'll get that first, maybe interview with Shepherd, and then we can talk about the rankings, or maybe I'll push him a little later in the show. I haven't decided yet, but tomorrow we'll be here 3 to 6 p.m. I hope you're here for it. Read me at johnconzano.com. You'll get all of the latest. Tune in tomorrow. Be here and grab the podcast. The Bald-Faced Truth, not here for a long time, just a good time.